Howdy. You're listening to Wild West Filmmaking, exploring the outlaw way of indie film. Raw stories and real lessons from the frontier. Hosted by yours truly, Josh David Jordan.
All right. Welcome to Wild West Filmmaking. Here we are. I think me and our next guest are in the same town, but we're not in the same room, but we will be soon. This is Jordan Walker Ross. Round of applause for Jordan. Jordan, thanks for hopping on this crazy new podcast, which is kind of just, we're just dissecting what's happening because it really is the wild, wild west out there when it comes to independent filmmaking. Like every day there's a new avenue or something's gone away or, it's changing. And I really do think that, a podcast like this, which we have people, talented people like you on, just talking about what's going on, people can take some nuggets from different episodes and maybe put together their own blueprint or really maybe just the maybe self-doubt can go away because, I really do think that everyone thinks there's a formula and I think that Hollywood has it figured out. And as me and you both know, they do not. And what's crazy is I think that whenever I get into a room, a door opens, I go through the door and I'm just in another room by myself. There's another door. I'm like, and you open up another door. And it's like, there's not just one way to do this. And I think your story is so incredible. Just your adversity, your determination, your joy. There's a lot of things with your career that you probably could have tapped out, right? Mm-hmm. And then things have opened up. So, what's crazy? I don't think I really know your early story, as in, like, when did you start? Were you a child actor?
Yeah. So, okay. I started have I told you the story about how I met my grandpa and my mom found my grandpa? Have you heard that?
I don't think I know how you found him. No.
So, my mom, my grandpa was dating a girl in California, in his early to mid 20s.
Yes.
They broke up. And then she moved back, to San Antonio where she was from. And, while she was there, she found out that she was pregnant and she didn't tell my grandpa. She had the baby but didn't want to, like, didn't feel ready to raise a child on her own. So she put my mother up for adoption, who was adopted by my adopted grandparents in Arlington, Texas, John and Jenna Walker. And, that's who raised my mom. And then she knew she was adopted, but she just never knew who her birth parents were. And then when I was born, I had all these medical issues. My mom was like, okay, I'm going to try to find who my birth parents are to see if there's anything that runs in the family. And also just curious who they are. So she hired a private investigator who tracked them down and she got a hold of her mom first. Nana Ann is what we call her. And she told her, well, your dad's an actor. He's on a show called Northern Exposure. And my mom watched Northern Exposure. She was a fan of it. And so she was like, I'll get you in touch with his agent. So she got in touch with his agent, called him, who then forwarded the call to my grandpa and was like, I've got a girl on the phone from Arlington, Texas, who says that she's your daughter. And he was like, well, I guess you ought to put her through then. And they put her through and they talked. And my mom and I flew out to Washington where they were shooting and met my grandpa and they, did a DNA test and all that. And they look so much alike. Like you can see, it's obvious when you see them. He ended up moving back to Texas because he's from Lubbock originally, moved back to Fort Worth and with us and bought a house and we lived with him. And my little sister was born and I had my big brother. It was a crazy situation. So I grew up visiting him on some of my earliest memories are on a film set with him, watching him in Westerns get, shot or driving off a cliff in a covered wagon. And, it was so much fun to see all of that stuff up close. And like, I was so interested in it. But then when I was six, I was super shy, had all these medical issues. So I didn't really talk to especially other adults. I only talked to like my mom and my grandparents. And then we happened to be at like a community theater audition for A Christmas Carol in at Main Street Theater in, forgot what city it is, but and at Main Street Theater, tiny little community theater. And my mom went to the bathroom. I wasn't auditioning. I was just there to, you know, we were there supporting them and we're going to go get dinner after. And my mom went to the bathroom and came out and I was on stage singing Silent Night. And my mom was floored. She said she just broke down crying because I never would, like, I don't know what it was that possessed me mm-hmm. to get up and do it. But I got cast as Tiny Tim. And then I was six then. So for the next 4 years, I played Tiny Tim at that theater for that show. And then in between those performances, I was auditioning at Casa Miniana, Bass Hall, Theater Arlington, Cats, all the theaters in the Metroplex, and was doing probably 5 to 8 shows a year as a kid. So it's like getting out of school, going straight to rehearsal or an audition. And it was amazing. You know, I think by the time I was 14, I had been in over 40 professional productions throughout DFW.
Oh, wow.
And that I fell in love with it. So that's how I got into acting and then started to shift in my teens to more film and television. Prior to that, I did a little bit of TV. I did like an episode of Walker, Texas Ranger as like a Christmas orphan. I did a episode of Barney, like things like that, all the stuff that was shot around here. And then started at 13 going to LA and was out there most of the time throughout my teens and into my early 20s. So yeah, that's kind of the cliff notes of my
it's story. So crazy. Well, first that you were Tiny Tim and then now you're playing Little James.
I know.
And also I did an episode of Walker, Texas Ranger. And I was casted like the bad guy that was supposed to be up against Chuck. And I'm 6'2" and Chuck,
you were too tall.
Too tall. I got nicked. I got put in the back. And then I played Barney. The main guy's contract was up and I was at Katie Studios. And I was late for class, but they saw me walking by. And the guy goes, "Hey, how tall are you?" I'm like, "I'm 6'2". He goes, "You fit the costume. Come in here." And I auditioned. And I did a whole episode. And I was like, "This is it." You know, I could do the whole "I love you." I could do the whole voice, everything. Well, they were negotiating a contract with the guy, and so they ended up. He ended up like taking less money, so to solidify his job. I was a pawn. You know what I mean? I was.
Yeah.
Like, and so yeah, but that was all because of KD Studio. And you went to KD Studio, right?
Yeah, so KD is actually where I like in that building I was cast in The Chosen.
Oh,
so it's kind of funny. Like we were both cast in different things there. I was working there, so I went to school there. I lived in LA, came back to go to school there, then moved back out there. And then I came back home after a few years full time in LA with like my tail tucked between my legs. I wasn't able to get anything out there. And it was such a discouraging time because I had gotten, 2 independent films in Texas, one while I was a student at KD. So I had to miss class, but it was because I was in a movie. So it was like a good reason. And then as soon as I graduated, I went and shot another one for like 2 months, in Dublin, Texas. And they were 2 like really small. One was called Rising Stars and one was called Beyond the Farthest Star. Totally unrelated. They just have star in the title. But I did those. And in my mind, I'm like, cool. I just did 2 films that like, you know, I thought were going to be a launching pad that naturally, like the natural progression would be now I'm going to get a theatrical film and then I'm going to get, you know, a guest star or a recurring role on a network show. So I kind of had that in my head and I went out there and that didn't happen. So I moved home, met Stacy, my wife, and we started our family. And I was like, well, I got to find some way to make money now that we have kids and we can't just keep scraping by. And I went back to KD and was like, hey, do y'all have classes I could teach? So I started teaching kids and teens classes, and then shifted into working admissions there. And felt stuck, like, you know, creatively, because I was like, it was 9 to 5, but it was an hour away from my house. So it's really, you know, an extra 2 hours of commuting. And I was like, when am I going to have time to audition or act again? Like, is this what I'm doing forever? And then I hadn't booked in 5 years anything other than a commercial I booked also at KD. And it was a Nike commercial that I was cut out of because my limp was too noticeable.
Oh my gosh.
There was, it was like distracting. So I did that. And then after that, several more years passed, booked nothing. And then I got an audition notice from Linda McAllister.
Yeah.
And it was for The Chosen, and it said like a period or a historical drama set in ancient Jerusalem. And I went in and I auditioned, and I almost turned it down because I had like tours to give of the school that day and meetings. So I was like, I'm not going to book it anyway. I'm just going to decline. And then I saw that it was at KD Studio, like, you know, a 30-second walk from my desk.
Wow.
So I was like, okay, I'll just go in during my lunch break and, you know, knock it out real quick. And thankfully I did, because it's, you know, that ended up being the launching pad that I thought, you know, the other things were years before.
Did you audition? Was that an audition? Was Dallas in the room on that?
So for the first round, it was just the casting directors, who at the time was Beverly Holloway and I think Brock Allen casting. I think they were helping with the local too. So they were in there. And then after that, for the callbacks, Dallas was there and a few of the producers. And I remember being in the room, the waiting room before, and I saw two guys that in the waiting room, that one looked more Middle Eastern than me. Two, they were both kind of like bigger, buff, like good looking dudes. So I'm comparing myself to them, like, well, they already look the part way more than I do. And they happen to be two guys that, like, anytime you turn on the TV, they're in a commercial. They're because that's most of the stuff we shoot here in Texas. So these two, they're super nice. I've become friends with them since. But I was like, these guys book everything. They're going to get this role that I'm auditioning for. And then I went in, did the audition, and Dallas got up and like shook my hand as I was leaving and was like, hey, you're pretty good at this acting thing. You should stick with it. And I was like, that was a weird thing to say. Like, does that mean I didn't, like, was he being sarcastic? Does that mean I didn't get the part? So he's like, hey, don't let it get you down. Keep trying.
Oh.
I didn't know what it meant. So I'm like, you know, thankfully it meant, hey, you're good. It was just saying what he meant. Yeah. Then I got the call for Little James, and the two other guys that I saw in the waiting room were cast as Eden's two brothers on the show too. So we all got cast in it, just in different roles than we auditioned for. But yeah.
And so when you're hearing about The Chosen, because at the time it's not what it is now, which is like taken over the world, literally, right?
Yeah,
it's become such a huge phenomenon, which is so amazing. When you were auditioning, did y'all think that you were going to be shooting like a couple of things, maybe it would get picked up? I mean, it's the life of Christ. I mean, were there thoughts of like, we're going to like, because right now it's like a lot of character development. You guys were able to spread it out. Was that not the case in the beginning? Was it going to be wham, bam?
It was, I think they always wanted to do a multi-season show. I had it kind of like, they had a blueprint of what they wanted to do. They weren't sure how many seasons or if they'd ever get past the first four episodes, because initially for season one, we only had the budget for half of season one. So I only shot 4 days in the first four episodes, because I was in two different scenes. So I did those. And then after, I was like, you know, I remember Dallas telling me on the day I wrapped the first four, I was on set enough those 4 days that I was like, I really like these people that I'm working with. I really hope we get to come back. But even if we don't, at least I'm going to have new footage for my reel, because it's been 5 years since I got any new footage. So I was like, at least I got that. And that's kind of what I expected. And then it was like almost a year later, we came back for the next four episodes. And I worked, what was it? I think 18 days on the next four. So it was like a decent amount. Mm-hmm. And the after that, it was like a year and a half almost before we did season two, because we were still like, we had to get all the funding before we could come back and shoot. Mm-hmm. And it was a little slower. And then for season two, people started to discover it during COVID, which it delayed our shooting for a bit. But then finally, in October of 2020, we went and shot season two in Utah, and we were the only show shooting during the, you know, the height of COVID. Everything else was shut down. And we shot season two, and that's when it started to shift. After during COVID is like when people really discovered it. Season
binge
two
watching.
Was,
yeah. They're binge
yeah.
watching. Yeah. Yeah.
Deadline was writing articles about, yeah. you know, this show is shooting during the pandemic, and, you know, they're able to do it without, you know, outbreaks and all this stuff. It was like kind of this groundbreaking thing. And it got us on the radar of like the industry as a whole. And then since then, it's been pretty consistent, like every 9 months. It's about 9 months between wrapping and then shooting the new season. Yeah, we'll be starting back up end of April for season six. So,
and then season yeah. five comes out in April, right?
Yeah, March like or wham, April. Bam.
Okay, yeah. yeah. I mean, speaking of Wild Wild West, I mean, I know for you guys, like, it started with Angel Studios, you know, just how crazy this industry is that, I mean, things got wonky. There's Rolling Stone articles. There's lots of discussions of, you know, he said, she said, and now, you know, Dallas has stepped away and he started his own production company, I believe, with some other people. And yeah. it's the Chosen production company. So just in that short period of time, you know, a solidified series gets, you know, legally jumbled and production gets jumbled, and it's a scramble. And now you guys are obviously, like, you know, you're trucking along. I mean, and you don't have to get into details on this,
sure,
but like, I'm just curious, or the people listening may be curious, like, if you're a part of something like The Chosen, like, are you guys, is that something that's like, you're signing a long-term contract? I mean, it's like, I mean, I can only imagine, like, with Jonathan Rumi, it's like, you gotta, you know, you can't tag Dak. You gotta sign Dak to a 5-year 150. But like, yeah. is that something like, cause, and it's also, you guys have press. I mean, you were like, one day I saw you were like by the pyramids in Egypt. I mean, so yeah. is that part of when you're signing on, it's like, okay, you're doing these seasons and you're also doing this press. And is that worked out? Like, they have your calendar ready. Is it pretty far in advance?
It's yeah, it's interesting. It's evolved. The first four episodes, I was on a day rate. And cause it was so early. And to at the time it was like $600 a day or something, where it was like, really, that was the most I had made, you know, for a day of acting. It was, so for a low budget thing, it paid pretty well. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, it was cool. And then the second half of season one, it was the same thing. And then season two, I got bumped up to I think all of the Apostles and like some of the other series regulars. We started getting paid per episode, and it was from there. I can't remember exactly how it was. I think we were just doing per episode. And then at some point during that, they came up with a deal, because there was such a long gap between season one and two. They were like, hey, we understand, like, we had to replace our first Big James, or between the first four episodes and the next four episodes, we had two different Big Jameses. Mm-hmm. And then between season one and two, we had a third Big James, who's our current Big James. But because of that, the reason we lost our first Big James is he booked some DC superhero show as a regular. So he's like, hey, I got to go do this. Mm-hmm. So they came up with a retention agreement.
Okay.
Where we were getting like per episode pay. And then it was like, I think 50% of our season salary. They then paid us during the off season to kind of be on right of first refusal of The Chosen. So we did that. And then season three, it was kind of more the same. And then season four is when they were like, okay, the show is big enough now, and the actors are like, we want to make it to where the actors can make a living off of this show. So they're not as pressured to be like, hey, I got to go do this thing and miss The Chosen. So they gave us deals that were seasons 4 through 7, with like built in pay bumps each season and all that kind of stuff. Which was this long, I had never gone through a negotiation process like that. We all got our entertainment attorneys and, Ellie, get out of here. My kid, she just scared me. I saw something moving.
I saw something moving in the background, but then it went away. That's funny.
Anyway, so I went through the negotiation process, and then we ended up coming to an agreement. So now we get paid still per episode. And then there's certain things, like we are required to go to the premieres, unless, like, you know, if I booked a Spielberg movie or something, I'm sure they would, you know, let me out of having to go to a premiere if I'm shooting something like that. But we do that. And then there's, you know, certain press obligations that we have. And then on top of that, they reach out every now and then about, you know, like Egypt, or I did something in Rome and Germany and Amsterdam, where they'll do like a documentary or a, you know, a screening or something, and then they'll fly you out there, and then they'll send you an offer, like a new rate for that trip. So yeah, it's also a good problem to have, but it's also complicated. And so like you learn from like the Egypt one was through the Come and See Foundation, and I learned a lot about, like, okay, cool, that was my first time doing a specific event that was like that. So I learned, like, in the future, I know what to request or what to say yes to or no to. And it's that kind of stuff they don't really teach you in like acting school, all the business stuff, but it's been a roller coaster.
And like with facial hair and stuff, y'all have it down to a science where you know exactly. I saw Jonathan on something recently, and he had like a pretty close shave.
Yeah,
I'm sure he knows his timing of when that Jesus beard comes back, because his is real, right?
Yeah, everyone's is real. They're all, or for the most part. A lot of the guys are naturally kind of hairy, so they can just like grow it quickly. I can't grow much. Like, I grow here pretty good. Mm-hmm. And then the sides, it's kind of peach fuzz. So they usually have to fill in the sides for me. But I typically have a little facial hair all the time. But I'll just let it go wild like 2 months before we shoot. Mm. And then if it's too long, they can trim it up whenever I get to set. But they'll send a notice probably in February and say, hey, guys, you know, don't get your hair cut, or, you know, trim your beard, because we're starting up in a couple months.
Yeah, it makes total sense. Okay, so you had mentioned a commercial that you had done. It was was it Nike or Gatorade?
Nike.
And they were saying like your limp was distracting or whatever. So has Dallas and like the writing team, or do they incorporate that with you, or do they write for you as well after they get to know you and the character development? It seems that way to me.
Yeah,
but they do a really good job of like writing towards people's strengths, you know.
Yeah, they do. It's been cool. Like, one, I think everyone is cast so well and has so much connective tissue to their characters, just all like from day one. But it's really, all those lines have blurred as the show has continued, because the writers, I'm really close to our writers, and so are so many of our castmates. So they know us so well that, like, when they're writing, even if it's not always intentional, sometimes it may be subconscious, like, oh, this is something Jordan would say or do, or, you know, Noah would react in this way. So I think it kind of bleeds through sometimes, like us and our characters. And they Dallas noticed that I had a limp on set, because normally I have a lift in my shoe and it can be a little more covered up, especially if I'm really focused on it. And then on set, my first day on set, I had flip-flops because I'm, you know, it's first century Jerusalem. We're all wearing sandals, and I couldn't wear my lift. So he noticed on set and asked what my condition was. And I told him, and I was freaked out because it was the same thing that happened on the Nike commercial. The director saw me without shoes on and was like, hey, are you okay? And he was like really concerned. And I was like, I'm good. And he asked if I would be able to do what's required of me in the commercial, because I'm playing like a virtual reality basketball game in the commercial. So I'm like slam dunking and dribbling a fake basketball. And I was like, yeah, you saw me do it in the audition and the callback. Like I can do it. And he was like, okay. And then he went and talked to the producer. I could see him like whispering off to the side. And then I showed up on set and they had one of the actors from the audition that I recognized in the same costume as me, just in case it was too noticeable. So that all happened. And then I had flashbacks when Dallas asked me, because I was like, they're going to replace me. And then we did all of season one, because all of season one was written. So that first year and a half that we shot the all of season one, it's never mentioned. So if you watch season one, actually, I barely ever have a walking stick. The only time I do is because I just, our prop master was like, hey, does anyone want a stick? And I was like, I'll take one. So at the time, little James wasn't even supposed to have a disability. And you can see that I'm like actively trying not to limp in season one, because that was my like just natural mindset as an actor was don't
protective,
limp.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then season two, finally, Dallas called me as they were writing it and was like, hey, we're wanting to write this into your character. Are you okay with it? And I said, yeah, but it was a weird shift psychologically being on set where it's like, Dallas, even to this day, there are times he has to remind me where he's like, hey, little James isn't as physically active as you. So like, you know, don't get up so quickly or don't, you know, like he's not as limber or, you know, whatever. So especially because in the storyline, little James's condition is progressing. So it's been an interesting like tweak I've had to make, where it's been freeing in so many ways. Like now, on El Tonto, for instance, I didn't feel, part of it was like just the atmosphere you create on set, but then also this experience on The Chosen of learning to act without even thinking about the limp. It's like I've returned back to whenever I was a little kid playing Tiny Tim again, where it's like, oh, I'm not, because at the time I didn't even have a concept of an insecurity or, you know, people thinking of my limp is a bad thing. And since, as soon as I did develop that through bullying and stuff like that, that's all that I could think of as an actor was like, don't limp. This is bad. Like, hide it. So, but now like on El Tonto, I'm able to just be and not like the running scene before. I would have been so paranoid about like, oh, I don't want to look stupid or I don't want it to be distracting. But when we shot, it's just like, I'm not thinking about that. I'm just thinking about my character's motivation and what he's running towards. And it's been a really cool blessing, but it's still, I find myself reverting back to that, like trying not to limp when I'm playing characters where it's like required, like on The Chosen. And it's been an interesting challenge.
Yeah, on El Tonto, you were running like the wind in like 114 degree heat in my cowboy boots.
Yeah, that's right. They were like a size too big.
Because the sand was so hot that you bare feet couldn't touch it. And I was like, well, just wear these.
Yeah.
And yeah, it worked. That's one of my favorite scenes when you come over that dune, that shot of you coming over the dune.
It's so cool.
It's so, and especially seeing it the other night when we were all in the theater and seeing how it's supposed to be seen in the historical Texas theater. I was just like, oh. That's it. That's it. So you also have a podcast, which is amazing. It's called What's Your Limp? So yes. We're on this topic, which is phenomenal. I love listening to that podcast because it's one of those things. And I really do want the heart of Wild West filmmaking to be that way too, which is like, you know, people can openly discuss how hard it is, you know, and especially like how hard it is if you have, you know, a limitation physically or whatever, mentally, mine's always panic attacks. We've talked about that on yours. So like doing the podcast, has there been like the reactions that you get? Are people coming out of the woodworks, like a thank you or people telling you stories? Has it been like a huge relief to bring people together and people can just like take a deep breath and be like, you're not alone in this.
Yeah.
We all have something.
Right. Yeah, it's been beautiful. I think that it's, for one, getting to talk to so many different people, some of whom I've watched my whole life in film and like admired, and then all of a sudden I get to have this conversation with them. It's like Scoot McNairy is one of my favorite actors, and getting to like interview him was so cool, like seeing how just normal he is and how relatable, like the insecurities I have on set, he has too. Mm. And he's working with Brad Pitt and, you know, like David Fincher and whoever, like he's doing these huge things. And it's, so it's reassuring knowing that. And then it's nice. Like when I've been in Europe for Chosen Things, I have people mention that they listen to the podcast in like Rome or Germany. And right. That's wild hearing that. And it's cool. I'm excited. I've been recording a lot of new episodes to relaunch in January. And I've got, let's see, who do I have coming up? I did Jamie Lynn Sigler from The Sopranos. She played Meadow Soprano a little while back. She'll be there. Paul Scheer from The League. Selma Blair, I just heard back from, so I'm getting her soon. John Heater, Napoleon yeah. Dynamite, I have.
Oh, no
up.
Way, no way.
So, yeah, he's actually, that was crazy. I did my first, like, Comic-Con type event Salt Lake. It was FanX of Salt Lake, and I was there with a couple castmates, and I saw John Heater was there, who my grandpa played his grandpa on something not too long ago. So I was like, I got to go say hi and just say that I'm Barry's grandson. And when I walked up, before I could introduce myself, I was like, hey, John, I'm Jordan. And he was like, you don't need to introduce yourself. I love the show. And he like freaked out because he's a Chosen fan, too. So that was like a surreal thing because I grew up, you know, Napoleon Dynamite came out when I was like 14. So it's like everyone quoted that for the next like 5 years. Like that's all.
Yeah.
Eat the food. That was a crazy experience. So getting to do the podcast and like talk to people who I've admired for so long and seeing, hearing their stories of like, you know, body image issues or addiction or like, you know, feeling imposter syndrome. It's helped me a ton. And it's been really nice to hear from like listeners that it's done the same. Like I got an email the other day from someone who listened to it, who's an aspiring actress, and just said that she's, you know, lost out on some roles lately and doesn't, you know, financially is struggling, but it's nice listening to the podcast and hearing like, you know, a lot of people go through that, and it's about persisting and keeping at it. And if it's something you love, it's like, don't let any of that, like, you got to keep going. You got to keep chugging along.
Yeah. It's so crazy because like you're saying, you know, we all have insecurities and whatever it may be. Sometimes it hits us the most, we're the most sensitive.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're dealing with that. And now you're on one of the biggest shows globally, you know, like I'm Orthodox Christian, and there's so many Orthodox who like, that's their show is The Chosen. Cause it's, you know, it's the most, you know, available and most historical.
Yeah.
So what's it like having insecurities, right? And then you're one of Christ's disciples. People look at you differently, right? In the real world. I think you were even telling me one time, like you went into Target and your wife like 45 minutes later calls and she's like, are you okay? And you're like, no, I've got people surrounding me. Is that something that you're having to like work through and always, because I'm sure it's age draining.
Sure.
It's also people are looking at you like if you touch the hem of their garment, you know, possibly is there something that The Chosen has set up? Does Dallas have any type of like psychologist, or is there any, or you guys just kind of are figuring it out as a group?
Yeah, I think we've figured it out as a group, but we lean on each other with a lot of it because we're all, you know, we were all pretty obscure, like unknown actors when we got cast. And now, like we have gone through this together. We will text each other when we have a really crazy like fan encounter or whatever. Because it's like, we're able to share that with one another. And it's also, it's kind of like the Friends cast when all of a sudden overnight, they became the most famous people in the world. We're not at that level, but it's something that like us in the cast are the only ones that can fully understand this specific type of like fandom. And because it's different from like, you know, a superhero movie or whatever, because this has to do specifically with people's like faith and like every day, what they live and breathe. So it's there's definitely pressure, especially I think more so for Jonathan, who plays Jesus. But For the rest of us, there's, you want to be available and present for people and give them a good experience, especially as a huge movie buff myself. I love, like, I have so many great stories of like meeting these actors that I'm, you know, a huge fan of, and them being so gracious with their time, and I fan out with people. So I totally understand when other people do, and I want to give them a good experience. But where it's tricky is like, hey, when you're with family, or, you know, my kids don't like crowds. They get really bad social anxiety, especially my oldest, and my wife gets bad social anxiety. So if we're surrounded, it can be kind of intimidating to them. And I have to figure out a way to, like, you know, in the conversation while being, you know, respectful of the person that's coming up, but also protecting my family. So there's some of that. And then there's, it's interesting too, because like you, we're all our own in the cast, our own people with our own opinions and beliefs. And then there's times where it's like, we share those opinions or beliefs, and then there's pushback because people sometimes they tie us to our character and expect us to kind of share all of their beliefs and opinions. Yeah. But at the same time, it can like be an opportunity to create, meaningful dialogues with people. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing I've tried to do with the podcast and, in general, like, talk about things that maybe can stretch people's perspective, and not to convince anyone like to believe what I believe, but just to be like, hey, have you considered this, or have you gotten to know this person? A good big example was one of our crew members had a pride flag on his vest, and he's one of the most beloved cast or crew members on the whole production, and he someone zoomed in on it. There's a big controversy. Mm-hmm. People saying things like The Chosen is planting pride flags on their set, things like that.
Of course. It
got so blown out of proportion. And people were calling for him to be fired. So I went on Twitter and just tweeted like, hey, we love and accept our LGBTQ brothers and sisters. And if you don't like that, then no one's forcing you to watch the show. And I went to sleep because I'm like, I love this crew member. I want him to know that he's not alone and like trying to defend himself. And a few other castmates did the same. And we woke up to thousands of tweets from people being like, fine, fire little James too. And like stuff like that. Mm. But I also woke up to a bunch of tweets from people saying like, hey, you know, I left the church because I'm gay, but I still have a really close relationship with God. Mm-hmm. And it meant a lot to see someone from a Christian show, you know, standing up for people like me and things like that, where, and then other people that may still be, have a different perspective when it comes to, you know, gay marriage or whatever it may be, but they at least are able to say like, hey, we shouldn't be treating this person that way. This is just another human that is working, like this is his job to work on the show. We shouldn't be treating him that way. That's not Christ-like. So it's an opportunity to create some like sometimes difficult conversations, but important ones that I think, you know, it's, there's so much tribalism and like my side or your side. So it's, I try to use that unique, position that I'm in where, you know, I'm an actor, like I'm very like open-minded about things and like progressive socially and all this stuff where I'm that, but I also have my spiritual beliefs and I'm on a show that's really important to so many people's faith. So it's a unique opportunity to be like, hey guys, let's have a conversation about this thing without, you know, ripping each other's throats out.
It's like a catch 22. Like if you're playing something like Little James or a disciple, people think that you live this evangelical disciple life.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. And maybe I'm not sure, but just an American Protestant evangelical feeling of like, well, then you have to be that. But if you were to play like a gangster or a serial killer, they're like, well, he's not really a serial killer.
Yeah.
He's played a character, but it's gray, you know, when it comes to, cause I mean, my dad's a traveling evangelist and I grew up in the,
that's right.
I mean, obviously, I went to everyone's summer camp, not just mine. But, you know, my dad preached at those. So it was like when I would do something, people would be like, oh, a preacher's kid shouldn't do that. And I'm like, well, I'm not a preacher. My dad is. So Yeah. So like, I also, when I was, when you're talking about being with the Chosen and your cast members, like, I love what we do. Obviously I love the creative part. I love writing. I love directing. I love, you know, red carpets and stuff like that. But what I really love the most is just when we're all together and the rest, it's like a vacuum, right? The rest of the world, I mean, it goes away.
Yeah.
And I like to, and you got to be a part of this, which is, I like to, if I can, put everybody in the same house or the same area, and we eat and drink, because we're only there for 2-3 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, and the camaraderie, you know, happens, and, you know, you're not worried about like washing your clothes. You're not worried about going to the dentist or picking someone up from school. It's just like, you're like there. And you were there for, I mean, a majority, what, 10, 11 days, something like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I was just curious, like outside, like, you know, you're on The Chosen, you've done other things, you've done a Marvel film. Like, what is it about indie film? And because they're different, indie film, yeah, and then a studio production, you know, because I figure The Chosen sort of, it's a studio production. It's, you know, you have,
yeah,
hundreds and hundreds of people, cast and crew. And yeah, then on ours, it's like 8 of us.
Yeah, or we're all like helping unload the trucks and things like that, where it's, yeah, I going back to Scoot McNairy, when I interviewed him, that's what we talked about, was like, he his favorite things to do are those projects where it's like, the crew is so small, he's having to hold the microphone between his legs during the scene, or things like that, where it's like, you know, everyone's helping carry the bags, and, you know, where you're staying in, everyone's in one Airbnb or in a little motel or, mm-hmm, whatever. And I agree. I think that it's, there's perks, like on The Chosen, it's crossed into this plane of like, the budget is so big, still, you know, it's not like Game of Thrones, but it's like, it's big enough to where, you know, we're able to like, stay in nice hotels when we go to events, or like, you know, the there's more luxury, there's more
trailers.
Yeah, we actually have bungalows, so we each have our own like actual building, like room that we have our dressing room in, and has you know, all the amenities we need, and like any food you could ask for, and we have coffee trucks, like all this stuff that's really cool. But there's something to like shooting something like El Tonto, where it's such a small crew, everyone gets to know each other a lot. But like on The Chosen, there's people, I try to get to know everyone, but there's people that have worked on it from day one that like, we've probably never had a conversation because there's hundreds of us on set. And it feels like they do a great job of making it feel like it's still a smaller production despite being so big. But, you know, you can't ignore that it is much more, we have way more resources on The Chosen, like the Crafty, PA, like everything is we can afford it. But with El Tonto, I love the feeling of like everyone eating together, you know, someone doing a run to Wendy's to get a bunch of burgers for lunch. Mm-hmm. And like, that's what we have for lunch. Yeah. And like, we hang out and talk about the scenes. Even like, you know, there was times where Frank and I would, I think, I forgot what moment it was, but there was something where we talked about, we came up with some little moment or idea, and it's like, okay, yeah, let's shoot that. And it's like, we have time because we're all just, we don't have a studio that's like, and a producer that's breathing down our neck, like, hey guys, we gotta, yeah, or Wi-Fi. So we have time to kind of play around and have fun. And it's, yeah, it reminds you again of like why we got into this in the first place, which is to play, to like make believe, and to,
yeah,
you know, hang out with your, that's usually what actors and filmmakers get into it for, is the camaraderie and the community that you find, and then just getting to make believe. And, you know, it starts out as like an escape often, and then morphs into, as you mature and like understand yourself better, becomes more of a exercise to get to know yourself on a deeper level. And it's and especially when it's in a safe environment, and like El Tonto, where you can, like, there's not the pressure that you may feel like on Marvel. I only worked a day on Black Panther 2, and everyone was great. Ryan Coogler was great. Martin Freeman, like they all did such a great job of making it seem smaller, but just the knowledge of like, this is a Marvel movie. I need to do this right. Like I can't mess up my lines. I need to do it, you know, perfect. I need to like be on time, like all this stuff where it's important to know your lines and to be on time. But the, I guess, anxieties that come with it on an indie, like when you're on an indie film, it's more like the pressure's off. You're there just to create art. You're not there for this machine that is, you know, multi-billion dollar thing where it, like they're pumping out content and everyone has like certain expectations for it. With El Tonto, it's like no one had any really expectations going into it. Like you had the vision in your head, right. But other than that, it's just like, let's go play and see what we can do, like what we come up with. Let's see, you know, on the day there's like so many changes or like rewrites or things where it's like, it's constantly evolving. And it's like this living, breathing thing that, it's, I don't know, it's exciting. And, I think the purest form of like filmmaking where it's like, it's not for the money. It's not for the, you know, like hopefully like when you do a film like this, it leads to other opportunities and to where, you know, it reaches an audience where you're then able to like go get a bigger budget for, you know, your next film or, you know, someone sees it at South by Southwest or wherever it ends up showing. And it's like, oh, let's, you know, the dude that played Ambrose or Genesius, like they were good. Let's put them in this film.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's not about that. Like when we're shooting it, it really is just about being in the moment and like making this movie as great as we can. I'm so proud of how it all turned out. And I'm so proud of you for, it was years of us like talking about it before, or at least a year or so leading up to it. And it's like the way it evolved over that time, just in the writing process to then actually shooting it felt surreal. And then it's and then afterwards and then seeing like it's just been such a cool journey and I'm so proud for you and happy for you and
that you were a part of that. And I think that's the beautiful thing is like, you know, we had the script, it would change even on days of, it was like we would kind of pivot, we stuck to the script, but I really did listen to you guys because, you know, it's like you have a different process than Frank, than a different process than Matthew Posey or a different process than, you know, Max Hartman or your grandfather. And it's, as a director, I think it's insane because you have to approach the whole thing like a project, but you're dealing with individual talents that need to be spoken to in a different way each time. But you have to listen. And I think that's the greatest thing about you guys is y'all were able to listen. And it was like y'all already played pickup basketball together, so you knew where someone was going to be, you know? And it seemed very, very, very natural. And it's such a rewarding thing for me to see scenes that pay off and you have an idea of what it's going to look like. But then when you guys, there's several scenes that you do in the film that it's just like, oh, that's better than what I had in my head. And it impacts you in a totally different way. And so, that's why I do it, you know? I guess speaking on that, like, was that pretty wild to like all these years, fast forward, like work with your grandfather and just a scene where it's just y'all two, which was a really impactful scene. It's kind of his big moment in the thing, but, and you had obviously some really big moments in the film, but that was such a cool thing for me just to witness it. I mean, it's like 115 degrees in a barn in the middle of, was it like September or something like that?
Yeah.
So is that something like are you nervous about that? Are you just excited? Is it, what's your emotions? Because your whole family was kind of there, Joe.
It was a lot of fun. I'm not used to having like my mom and Joe there. So that was cool. Like it felt, it just felt all so natural. Like I've gotten to be in things with my grandpa. I was in the two films that I did before going to LA. He was in both of those, which is how I got the audition for those films. But there was a bit of a, insecurity in that, where it's like, oh, did I just book this role because my grandpa is in it?
Sure.
So over the years, like the things I've gotten to do with him, one of the first film roles I got, it may have been the first, if you ever go to the visitor center at the state capital of Texas, there's a short film that play, like this educational film, that plays, and it's narrative. It's like probably 15 minutes, and it just plays on a loop for all the field trips and stuff that go there. And it's me on a, like a tour of the state capitol. And then I sneak off and, I meet a ghost played by my grandpa who helped, who helped build the state capitol. And he shows me all of like the secret places of the state capitol. And it's like a fun little, like, you know, educational film. And that was the first film thing I ever did where I spoke. And it was with my grandpa and it was really cool, but that was the last time I actually got to act with him in a scene until El Tonto. So it was really cool, like a full circle moment of like, getting to do that. And that's why I want to do as much as I can, with him now that we're both, you know, at a place where we're able to be a little more, picky with certain things that we choose, or, you know, can maybe get, so we're working on this project that I told you about where we're writing it and wanting to produce it. So, yeah, it's, I want to, any chance I get to like have scenes with him, especially, I would jump at it. So it was so much fun that, you know, we got to make that happen.
You guys talk about it. You talk about like, acting stuff, like you, is there, or do you have your own style? He has your own style and you just really just hang out when you're hanging out, or is it, do you pick his brain? Like, it could be business or it could be the acting stuff. I mean, I don't know if that's something you just send him a call and be like, hey, this is happening. Is that normal or whatever?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like for him, he usually, like, he's a storyteller. So he tells a lot of stories of like, I'll ask about like, what was this person like to work with?
Yeah.
Or, you know, how was Sidney Poitier to work, to be like, how was it being directed by him or the Coen brothers?
Yeah.
Or he was directed by Steven Spielberg in the Steven Spielberg, like video game about filmmaking, where he plays like the warden of a prison and Quentin Tarantino was one of his prisoners. It was a weird, you could find it on YouTube somewhere.
That's crazy.
It's like, yeah, a movie making video game by Steven Spielberg. So things like that, he'll tell crazy stories that it's like, man, like he tells a story about working with Sean Penn in a made for TV movie when Sean Penn was like 19 and he's a cop that's interrogating him. And he said every take Sean Penn is like, he breaks down crying in the scene and he's like, there's snot. He's just like sobbing. And then they yell cut and he dries it up and then starts over. And they did it, you know, like 15 times. And he said every single time he just nailed it. And that it's like getting to do that scene and then leaving, being like, oh, that kid's special. He's going to, you know, he's going to be good. And then, you know, now he's Sean Penn.
Hi, Sean Penn.
So, yeah, that's usually the kind of stuff we talk about. But then when it comes to acting, it's like we have, it's been nice because we play very different roles for the most part. But then I guess when I think about it, like someone like Roscoe in Lonesome Dove, kind of like this simpleton, that's a character I could totally see myself playing, but then I could never play, you know, the general in War Games. So it's like we're both definitely character actors where there's like, we both thrive on that. Like we love getting to come in and play, you know, these like quirky, funny, like comedic relief or villain characters. Like I got to play a villain in this like George Washington movie about the French Indian War. And that was so much fun because my grandpa's played so many villains too. And it's cool, like getting to like compare the roles that we play sometimes. And he's always so supportive. I remember his first movie he booked when he was 40 years old. And it was Urban Cowboy.
Oh, yeah.
And he told me after, like, I booked my first one when I was like 14 or something. He was like, well, you got me beat by however many years. And it's like, he's always really, really supportive of all of that. Cause like I'm 34, it's like another 6 years, and that's how old he was when he did his first movie. So it's like, it's been really, he's been encouraging in that area. Like when I feel down or I feel like, oh man, I haven't booked anything in years. It's like, he didn't book anything for the first 20 years that he pursued this. And yeah. Now he has 350 credits. So it's, yeah, it's kind of like, he's one of those, that he's a man of few words when it comes to like having, you know, deep conversation about our methods or whatever. He's more of a lead by example guy. I think the biggest thing I've learned from him is, patience and like being on a set. Cause I was on so many sets with him and, you know, even like as a teenager and into my 20s, if he's doing a movie like Dukes of Hazzard, when I was 15 or 16, I went with him to LA to shoot that because I wanted to meet Stifler and Johnny Knoxville.
Yeah,
and I was like,
of course.
As a teenager, I'm like, these are like my, you know, role models. And I met them and it was so cool. And like, then on, while we were there, he was like talking to the director about certain like improvisations because he loves to improvise. Yeah. As you know,
as I know.
And he was talking about improvisations, but like him finding the beats and the funny like things that he can add, and the patience of like when he was doing anger management with Charlie Sheen is super prepared and super he's efficient because he did 2.5 Men Forever. Like he knows exactly what to do on those multi-camera comedies, but he shows up when he's ready to show up. So he, on that show, I went with him to set. He went through hair and makeup. Everyone else went through hair and makeup. And then we were sitting around for like 2 or 3 hours. And I was like, when are you going to shoot? And he was like, oh, whenever Charlie shows up. And finally, Charlie showed up and went right through hair and makeup. And they're like, okay, let's go. And then the whole thing went by so fast because they're making up for lost time. But they got everything they needed to get because he's just like, he knows exactly what to do. But my grandpa, watching how he handles those situations of like, you know, I'm controlling what I can control. So whatever else happens, it's like, if we got to come back tomorrow, we'll come back tomorrow. Like it's not, that's wild. That's out of my control. So, I think that being flexible, his favorite quote is when it comes to acting is, you got to have the vulnerability of a baby, but the skin of a rhinoceros. He definitely, he definitely does that in by the way he approaches a business.
Yeah, totally, man. I mean, I was going to ask you actually, like, before, as we wrap this up, just one of the questions I always want to say, it's like, it's very cliche, but it's not like, what would you tell your younger self? But it's like, what's something for you going from like, you know, commercials that they cut you out of to Los Angeles to back to Texas. And then now, you know, you're in a pretty, at the time being a really solid place and you're able to do like independent films with me. Like, is there something that you've learned in that short period of time that like is like a little nugget that people who are listening to this, they're like, just something, it could be anything. It could be super short, it could be, put you on the spot there.
I'd say, I mean, I think the big thing that I've learned is, in this industry, you can never get too like comfortable. Cause I've lucked out where now, you know, I don't know what the percentage would be, but like I've now been fortunate enough when The Chosen's over with, I'll have been a series regular on 7 seasons of a successful show, which is great. Like that's I won the lottery with that.
Yeah.
And it's easy to be like, okay, cool, I've got it made, and like the opportunities are going to come and all of that, but that's not always how it works. And it, for me, I've gotten some offers, like I've gotten calls about some things that have been great, but then I've still had to generate a lot of it. And I think there's so much that's not in your control in this industry, like what auditions you get or you know, they don't cast you because you're too short, or like your agent may not know of this particular project, so you never get to audition for it. So for me, I say, you know, take it into your own hands and make your own opportunities. Like, that's how I met Frank. I saw some of his short films and just added him on Facebook and was like, hey, let's be friends and maybe we'll work on something one day. So for like 5 years before El Tonto, we never met in person, but we talked all the time on Facebook. And then I found you after I watched your first film and was like, this is awesome. I want to work with this guy. And then that led to that. And then same with 1883 and Black Panther. I emailed the producers and casting directors of both of those, which led to me getting the auditions. Every week I email, I go through Production Weekly, Production List, all of the trades. And if I see a project or something happening that it's like, I want to be in that, I just email everyone that is is attached to it, all the producers or whoever. I've gotten really good at finding emails. And I just email them and shoot my shot. And the other day I had a general like meeting, a Zoom meeting with a showrunner of like a really big series that's doing a new one. And who knows if anything will come of it. But it's like, just because I reached out and they're like, is really cool. I'll have you bleep out the title.
Okay. Yeah.
For Hocus Pocus 3, they're developing that. But I emailed the producer of it, and he produced the other films in this franchise. And I just wrote this pitch saying like, I'd love to audition if there's a part for me. I mentioned my disability. I send like my scene from The Chosen and my demo reel. And then he wrote back, or he called me actually. I got a phone call from an 818 number, which is Los Angeles. And I was like, oh, crazy. Like I usually don't get calls from there. And I let it go to voicemail just in case it was spam, but it was a voicemail from this producer who also has scoliosis and has had a bunch of back surgery. So he really resonated with that. and then he called back, or I called him back and he answered. And he was like, we're still a ways off, but from like making it, we're still writing this film. But he was like, I'm definitely keeping you in mind. And I forwarded all your material to the heads at the studio. And he said, I'm also working on a film because he owns the rights to a very popular book series, very popular children's series. And they're doing the first live action adaptation of it with Ron Howard attached to direct. And he was like, once we're done with the script, I'm going to send your stuff to Ron and maybe we can find something for you in that. And again, I don't know if anything will come of it, but it's like, if I never emailed that guy, neither one of us ever would have known that the other one existed. So I would say to my younger self or to anyone listening, just don't be afraid to shoot your shot. It's good to like be aware of where you're at on the ladder. Like if you are right out of acting school, like if you just graduated from KD Studio as an actor and you've only done like two student films there, that's great. We all start somewhere. But if you reach out to, you know, Martin Scorsese, you're probably not going to hear back. It doesn't hurt, but it's like, you're probably not going to hear back. So what I did, I started with after the first season of The Chosen, before it took off, I just reached out to like filmmakers that were out of film school that like I'd look on backstage.com or wherever and find breakdowns. And I'd email people that had really, really high quality student films under their belt or really high quality short films under their belt that maybe got accepted at like South by or DIFF as in the short film category, because I'm like, okay, cool. I'm at least around their rung of the ladder. Even if they're a rung or two above me, I'm close enough to where they're more likely to like respond and to, you know, be open to collaborating. And then as you go up, I still reach out to like short film, like filmmakers that only have short films under their belt, because if I find a short film that I'm blown away by, I'm like, I want to get in with this person before they take off and get plucked up by Marvel. So it's all strategic, but yeah, like to increase your chances, reach out to the people close to where you are in your career trajectory that you think you could collaborate with. And then just keep nurturing those connections, and you never know where it'll lead.
No, I think that's huge, but I think that people feel like they're bothering people, and you're not. Yeah. There's so much noise out there that if you don't really stay in front of people, you can be forgotten. And I mean, you know this. After every project that we make, we're basically fired and we're unemployed.
Yeah.
And projects take so long for development. It's like just our conversation. We're talking and talking that I started to write more and more for you, right? And more for Ambrose. So like by the time we're on set, I mean, you're in the whole entire thing from the beginning to the end. And that's, I don't think people are waiting for them to like start shooting and then they reach out and they go audition. It's like, if you really, and it's, you're really, really wonderful and really, really fantastic the way that you network. And it's so important. I mean, you can't get bummed out for every no, but you can't get too excited for every yes.
Yeah.
Because it could change, it could, you know, lose financing, but you're in that wheelhouse. I mean, there's so many filmmakers that I meet at film festivals or online, or you may post something, somebody like there's a guy from 1883, I won't say his name, but he's gonna be on the podcast as well. And it was because of you talking to him, he reached out to me, and somebody else was making a film that he's in. And I was in Fort Worth, and there's, you know, it's never ending. And that's where the door is gonna be. When you open up that door, it's probably you weren't invited in the first place, and someone tells you to come over, next thing you know, you're like, oh, you're in a project. You know, you're teaming up with something, or someone's gonna, you know, work on your script. There's so many possibilities in this day and age. I think that's super, super important. Okay, we gotta wrap. I've taken so much of your time, Jordan.
No, you're good. I have nothing going on. You're good.
Also, do you go by Jordan Walker Ross every time? Or is it?
It's like whenever I'm credited, I do because there was already a Jordan Walker and a Jordan Ross in SAG, so I'm all three.
Yes,
yeah, but. But yeah, usually when people introduce me or whatever, they usually say Jordan Ross, but I'm fine with whatever.
Gotcha. So how can people find you? How can they bug you and stay connected? What's like the best handles? Is there a website? And what do you have coming up?
Yeah, you can go to my website. It's just jordanwalkerross.com. That's kind of like the central hub for everything, but then social media at the Jordan Ross on all the platforms, or at What's Your Limp on all the platforms. That'll be back in January on like Apple Podcasts, YouTube, everything else. And then what I have coming up, El Tonto Por Cristo. I'm excited for the rest of the world to see that. I'm so, so proud of it. I was telling Frank after the screening that I was like, this is the film I'm most proud of, like that I've been a part of, where just the process of it, getting to like be involved throughout the you know, as you're writing it and hearing what, like, you would text me like, hey, I just came up with this scene where you and I'm writing a scene for you and Frank together, and like things like that was really cool. And then just the way it turned out, it's like the kind of film that I love, that's so patient and isn't rushed at all, and there's so many questions at the end where you're like, what does all this mean? I need to watch it again. And like it's beautiful. So it's so just layered and nuanced and complex, and it's all the performances, the cinematography, the writing. So I'm so excited for that. By the way, speaking of like films that touch on religion, I don't know if you've seen Conclave yet.
No, it's on my list.
I just watched it this morning, and it's incredible.
It looks it's my kind of film too.
Yeah, but it's so good. So and it's fun now watching films with like priests or monks. Now that I've done it, I'm like, oh, I get what they're doing right there. Like, I get, even if it's not like an Orthodox film, there's still crossover.
Oh, for sure.
And it's
the terminology. Yeah, there's lots of that cross. Yeah.
So it's really fun to see. But then I have another film called Rise and Shine that also stars Rachel Bay Jones from, what was it? Dear Evan Hansen on Broadway. But she is, it's about a young girl with cerebral palsy who is trying to fit in this new public high school. And I play her teacher, and I'm the teacher of like the special needs class. And we used all young actors with different special needs, like actors with cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, autism, And it was such a wonderful experience. I shot that in Kansas City during, like, we had a 2-week hiatus of The Chosen from Utah to Texas when we moved. So I went straight from Utah to Kansas City for 2 weeks to shoot that, and then straight from Kansas City to Texas to keep shooting The Chosen.
Yeah, love it.
So that's been submitted to some festivals, so we'll see what happens with that. And then, then The Chosen season 5 coming out in April, and then we'll start season 6 up, and we'll see what else happens between now and then.
And you do, and just so that everybody knows, you're not just a phenomenal actor. You're also you're a writer, and I know that you want to, like, not want to. You are going to be directing, producing. These are all things. So, and that's I think it's super important, because I started out as an actor. I still do it. I mean, I play little bits and parts in my own films, and then, but it's like my real passion, because as an actor, you know this. It's like, you're there just for a little bit, and then the film may not come out for 2 or 3 years. And you're like, what? You know, it's like this weird void. And I feel like when you're writing and directing and producing something, it's like, even though you may wish that you could run away after 2 weeks, you're stuck with it. But I love telling stories, and I know you do. And I'm really excited for everybody to see your performance in El Tanto por Cristo. It's one of my favorite. The scene of you coming over the dune, and it's like a painting, you know.
It's so cool.
Everything came together, and we love following you on The Chosen. And just, and me and my wife owe you and your wife dinner. We're going to take you guys out to eat.
Yes, please.
And chit chat and hang.
Yeah, after this Thanksgiving weekend, let's plan something. And then you mentioning acting, you acting, I want to, in your next film or in one of your films, if you're in it, I want us to have a scene together.
Yeah.
So I want to act with you. And
I was supposed to in this one. It was just, it got so crazy, and we were so thin when it came to crew. That I was lighting, and I was ended up lighting everything by myself pretty much.
Yeah.
And then helping with costume design. And I was like, if I try to get myself in front of the camera, I'm taking away from a crew member. So, but yeah, definitely. And that would be a dream for me, is to, immortalize our relationship forever.
Yeah. And maybe we'll get Scoot McNairy too. We'll give
him Scoot.
He loves the indies. So,
well, if we get Scoot, we have to get Frank too.
Yeah. Well, we're all brothers. Yes. You, me, Frank, Scoot. And yeah, it'll be amazing.
It's already a hit. It's already huge. I can see the poster.
Yeah. It's perfect.
All right, buddy. Thank you so much for, spending time with me before the holidays. And
of course,
I can't wait to see you in the real world.
Yeah, same, man. Well, I'll see you soon.
All right, buddy. Bye.
Bye.